This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome back, everyone, to Just My Archetype. I know I've been gone. You've probably missed me, written longing letters and handed them to pigeons outside your window. I did not get any of them, but I am back anyways. I have another two-guest episode, which I am thrilled about. I wanted to do an episode with this first guest of our two for a long time. I wanted a podcast with him. So our first guest, welcome to our virtual studio, the one and only host of the Purple Pants podcast, season 28 beauty. It's Bryce Isaiah. So first, welcome, Bryce.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. I don't want to hold our second guest silence. Yes. So let me introduce our beautiful second guest whose sign off on his text is how I will introduce him. I want to be clear. This is how he signs every text. He's the 17th runner up and tanned queen of season 39. Welcome, Vince Mula.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome both.
So happy to be here.
I love that I'm doing another two guest podcast. I'm really excited to get into this one. Bryce and I were chatting and I was like, Bryce, I want you on the podcast. What is your archetype? And we were talking and he's like, I'd love to talk about what it's like being the type of person Survivor cast when you are both queer and a person of color and have a conversation around that. And you basically asked me if I was down to do that on the podcast, and I'm very open to it. So I'm glad you're both here to talk about what that's like and maybe give the listeners more insight into, you know, what it's like being cast and being on the show when you are that type of person. So welcome to the podcast, and I'm excited to get started.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think this podcast is really exciting because I would say maybe a couple of months ago, randomly, I was like watching a show and I text Vince to see if he was watching it. And we like organically had this conversation surrounding the subject. And it was and I had never really talked in depth with Vince about the subject, but it was so crazy to hear how similar our story was, emotions were, and similar to like our life perspective, were so similar. And so I was just like, wow. And when you like reached out to me, I was like, you know, I would love to talk about this, but I really think, Vince would be even amazing to have on because we had a similar conversation, just about our experiences. So I just wanted to echo, I'm excited to be here.
And I also just want to say thank you, Bryce, for remembering the 17th runner-up in having your conversations.
You're not the only 17th runner-up. And it's interesting enough that a lot of queer POC people that play Survivor come in 17th place.
Well, I was like very interested to have this conversation, especially since the last podcast I did was with Wendell and Dom. We talked about the bromance, and I asked them like, what was your archetype separate from the bromance? And Dom had this, like, you know, Jersey bro thing. And Wendell was like, well, I felt like I was being cast as the black guy on the show. And so I think it's, when I have a podcast about archetype, I think it's important to talk about, you know, what kind of archetypes you're allowed to be when you add, you know, different identities into the mix. So I'm glad you introduced me to Vince as well.
Yes.
Because we've never met. This is another podcast where I know one person fairly well and I don't know the other person. And I get to meet them through the mic.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to kind of start at the beginning. And, like, how did you both find, like, why did you love Survivor? Vince, I know when you were out there, you got really emotional talking about how much the show meant to you, especially meeting Sandra. So, at what point did you both find the show?
Bryce, did you want to go first?
I'll let you go. I'll let the 17th boot go.
Yeah. Well, thank you for creating the runway for me, Bryce. I'm going to shut it down the runway right now. So as I said, in a lot of my, like, pre-game videos and things, Survivor really was, it was like a, as I said, like a point of inspiration for me growing up poor, growing up not having access to cable. Like, CBS was a free network and Survivor was that show that allowed me to see, like, beyond Merced, beyond the small Central Valley town, beyond the statistics that kids from my community face. And so that's really how it inspired me to, like, go above and beyond just the confines of a small rural town with, like, very low, college education and, like, very low prospects for kiddos from my community. I am Hmong American, a child of refugees. And so it really allowed me to, it provided me with, like, a lens into worlds that I never even dreamed were possible. Like, getting on a plane, I never got on a plane until my freshman year of college. And it was because I was in an a cappella group. We were going to New Orleans and that was the first experience I had on a plane. And I was just talking about this with friends yesterday, also low income. But, like, I remember that first experience, I was just so scared of even accepting, like, a bag of peanuts or, like, accepting soda, because I was like, do I gotta pay for this? Like, I don't know if it's free, because if it's not free, I'm not gonna take it. And so Survivor in those ways.
That is, like, so crazy, Vince, and I... Oh.
Yeah.
I hate to cut you off. Yes, I have, like, a phobia with getting on a plane and, like, when they offer you the stuff, I pretend I'm asleep because, like, I like the anxiety of that all. Like, yeah. That is so crazy. I'm gonna be quiet.
And so, like, Survivor gave me these ideas, right? That I could potentially eventually, like, get on a plane and travel across the world or, like, challenge myself. I remember, like, the first season I really saw that drew me in was Africa. And I was like, dang, they're out there in the safari. There'd be, like, lions everywhere. Wow, that's what I want to do. And that was always just kind of, like, in the back of my mind. And I said it all the time to people, folks, thus. People just thought I was kind of crazy, honestly. And so I decided to apply as a senior in college. I was like, I really don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And I love Survivor. Let me just give it a go. And at that time, they had, like, the timer on the submission page and it was like 5 minutes left. And I was like, oh my God, let me record something. I recorded something really fast. I sent it in. It was so bad, y'all. I just watched it. I found it. And I was like, oh, nah. Didn't hear anything. And then I graduated and left and went to Korea, worked full time for 4 years. And then I took a year where I was working part time and then was really just focusing on myself, trying to prepare for PhD programs or applications and kind of ground myself and understand who I was. But then I decided, you know what, why don't I try Survivor again? And so I applied to Survivor again, but I had no idea about the application process. I had no idea about the timeline. And so I sent it in like, I think, maybe March. And I was like, I'm going to get on 36 or 37 with not knowing anything. Didn't hear anything back. But then I then got into, like, listening to Rob Has a Podcast. I got into Reddit and reading all the AMAs. And then I also started following like the social media pages of casting directors and associates. And there was one in particular who would post like, oh, we're looking for these types of people or whatnot. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to take it into my own hands. And I emailed that person and was just like, hey, I think I fit the profile you're looking for. And sent them my photo and everything. And then they got back to me and they were just like, hey, yeah, like, I think we've found the person already, but I will keep you updated just in case things fall through. And I was like, oh, dang, yeah, it's going to happen, y'all. It's going to really happen. And nothing more. And then I was leaving Korea and I was like, you know what? I am just going to record a video. I'm going to just put it out there and I will send it in when I get back to the States in August. In September, actually, because that was when people were like, send your tape in September. So I recorded it, just a 3-minute video of me just being myself, the Vince for the 219. Also demonstrating how I can code switch back and forth to survive in certain spaces. And then I got back in July and then they announced it was like a whole new application process and they had changed the platform and the platform wasn't working very well. So then this casting associate again was like, hey, if you cannot send your documents in and your materials in, send them directly to me. That's fine. So that's what I did. I was like, it didn't work. And so I sent it directly to the casting director associate again, and then immediately got a reply back and everything started. And I was like, y'all, I was telling my family at that time, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get on Survivor. And they're like, you're crazy, Vince. I'm like, no, really? Like, they sent me the documents. And so that's kind of my journey. And it took a very long time, actually. I think I was one of the last ones confirmed to be on the show. And I think a lot of it had to do also because, you know, in my season, Jeff noted me as like one of the males to watch out for. Somebody like we have never had anybody like Vince on before, and we're probably not going to have anybody like Vince again. And I think it was the problem, or not problem, but the difficulties of getting through casting for me was that I was the first. Like, people had never experienced anybody like me. So a lot of questions in regards to like, why do you talk like that? Or like, are you authentic in the way that you're presenting yourself? And I don't think it was until they interviewed me directly that they're like, oh, dang, yeah, nah, that's just Vince. Like, that's Vince. So yeah, so that was kind of my journey application process till getting on.
That, I know this is your podcast, Hannah, but hearing Vince talk, I have a question for you, Vince. Because it's lingering in my soul. When you went out there, and answer this honestly, because I would like to tell you my answer. Did you believe that you could win?
Yeah, I was like, I'm a boss expletive and I'm going to win this, you know? And like, then, I don't know what happened. But
it's like, even when you saw everyone else, like, was your confidence as high? Or like, I'm talking about like when we're starting to play and we're meeting everybody. Like, okay, what was your thought process then?
Yeah, so that actually, if you're talking about my like change or my perspective after seeing everybody, that was probably my ideas of like where I would fall started to like change the morning when we met everybody downstairs. Like, I came in, I was like, oh, they is so diverse, but also like the men were like 6 feet and above.
Vince, I had the same perspective. Mm-hmm. I was like, bitch, I'm coming to win. And when they got us from our hotels in LA and we went down, and I, like, the first person I saw was like Garrett, and then rest his soul, Uncle Cliff. Mm-hmm. I was just like, what am I doing here? Like, you know, and just hearing you talk really like makes me think of like imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it comes from, you know, not seeing yourself in a space that you don't believe that you can occupy. And although like, you know, the first winner of Survivor was a gay man, he was a white gay man. And I think that that's important for us to talk about, mm-hmm. because there is a difference in the LGBTQ+ community. It is, you know, a white gay man's community. It's mm-hmm. not built for the gays of color. And so it's just, just interesting in that sense, because like I just definitely was like, I definitely thought I knew I had what it took. I knew I could play the game. I knew all of these things, but to see all of these, like the men specifically, like I was just like, oh my God, like, am I going to be able to infiltrate these people? Am I going to be able to like be my authentic self with these people, was like literally my first reaction. And that kind of sort of like self-doubt stepped in, not to mention when like during pregame, you know, the night before when everyone gets to meet with like Jeff Probst, and I was like, you know, my casting people were like, oh, Bryce, we want you to go first. You're high energy. Like Jeff will love this. And I'll never forget this. I was so excited. It was Jeff and another producer. I went in. I was so excited. They were like mildly excited. They were like, there was a fruit tray. They were eating fruit. And I was like, hey, Jeff, how are you? And I just remember before I left, I was just like, don't worry, Jeff, I'm going far in this game. You know, you're going to know who I am. And Jeff looked at me and were like, I've seen a lot of big personalities go out early. And I was like, and I, okay. And I will never forget that. And like up until that point, I was like so excited. I was like, you know, I had overcame seeing all of the men, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do so great. But those last words really resonated with me. And I just was like, okay, am I going to be the first boot? Am I going to be like, I don't know. It just was really, just something that always sat with me. And I very rarely tell that story, because no shade to Jeff. I'm sure he's seen, you know, 300 of us. So, but that really kind of sort of stuck with me. And I just remember, like, for me, I watched Survivor when I was in college. My cousin watched it, and we went to the same college. And I remember, you know, I'm an old girl. Survivor came on Thursdays. So, you know, and at that time I had like Tuesday, Thursday classes. So Thursdays were like my Friday. So we would like get drunk and watch Survivor. And I just remember being like, there's no one like me. Like, there's no one close to me. And I just remember saying to myself, if I ever apply, I would have to get on, because there's no one like me. And I remember it was like January, the end of January. And I was like, you know what? One night after watching Survivor, again, I was a little drunk. I was like, let me just, you know, the episode went off. Jeff was like, we're looking for you. And I was like, oh, Jesus, he's talking to me. He is talking to me. So I'm an old girl too, Vince. And so I remember typing up my little
profile
application, and it was like like 15 minutes you had. And so I was like, ooh, I recorded a video, and this was back when the iPhones was old phones, and I could not get to compress my like 3-minute video to get down. And you know, at this point I'm drunk, and you know, it's like 2:00 in the morning, and I'm like, okay, listen, I gotta go to work in the morning. So I just literally cropped my video from 3 minutes to like 45 seconds. And I just sent the 45 seconds in, and I just, you know, was like, okay, it is what it is. And I remember 2 weeks later, like my casting person called me like as I was like coming out of a home visit. And I was like, this is a weird number. I'm like, hello? And they're like, hi, is this Bryce? This is so-and-so from Survivor. I'm like, Survivor? So I just think that, I didn't know what to expect. I was like shocked at how quickly they called. And I was shocked the fact that like they actually like watched the videos, because it's like I only sent in 45 seconds. So I just say that to say to all of the people that are in my DMs, like, can you watch my Survivor video? They actually look at the videos. So like, you know, the best way is to apply and send in a video to wherever the website is that they tell you to send it.
That it's interesting, Vince, that they said that they've never had someone on the show and they never will again is a very ominous thing. But I had a question. I know what code switching is, but for the listeners who might not understand what code switching is, can you define that and talk about in what ways you were like code switching during casting and like what that pressure was? Because that is not something a lot of people have to think about when they get cast on Survivor.
Yeah. So code switching, I think predominantly when you think of it is, attributed to African-American Black individuals using AAVE. And then when it comes specifically to other communities that grew up in the hood or grew up in like underprivileged spaces, and that's how you talk, so it's not AV per se, but it is very similar in the ways in which you enunciate things and whatnot. And it's typically just like not standard English, quote unquote, right? So you really have to like adjust yourself. So I switch in and out a lot. Like if you want me to be basic Becky Viz, I could do that. Like, yes, we can really very much to talk about the politics of what's going on in our country, blah, 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 blah. But like when I talk with my friends, when I talk with people I'm close with or folks who I feel comfortable with, then I automatically switch back into the vernacular that I grew up with. And typically, you know, it's just not seen as something that is like academic or professional. And so, you know, I think when I talk about it, some people who have not been exposed to it just think that it must be some sort of personality disorder, or it must be just like, oh, he really know how to switch between characters. But it's like, no. Like we have had to adapt ourselves to the larger majority so that we can survive. It's not about thriving. It's about surviving. And that's the first thing, you know, that I learned at Stanford was like, I came in and people were like, why you talk the way you talk? Like, are you like, where are you from? Like all these questions that were just very intrusive, first and foremost, but also just like very constructed around an idea of who deserved to be in spaces like Stanford. And so I switched my vernacular real fast after that. And I still experienced that as well. And I think that's something that going forward in the professional world and also like where we are now with the country and Gen Zers, like the vernaculars are changing. And how do we ensure that, you know, people from various backgrounds are being understood? And I can definitely add more to this as well about code switching.
Yes, 100%. And even there's like a subculture of code switching, like even like in the gay community, you know, a lot of the times, like, you know, we'll use the term like girl, like, And then, you know, sometimes people get confused, like, no, my pronouns are he and him. However, you know, in the gay community, we use girl. My car could be girl. Like, you know what I mean? And like a lot of people don't understand that. However, they are so quick to poach our vernaculum, especially the urban gay community, for music, for songs. You know, name a rap female out that doesn't have a good gay around her. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like there's even a deeper level to the code switching, which I commend you for that, Vince, because it's like, I get it. I see the, even from a professional to just even with your friends to even with like the kiki with your girlfriends. Like, you know, it's a masterful skill that you have. And like you said, it's not like I'm doing this to thrive, bitch. I'm doing this to survive. And I received that. And just even me knowing you, I'm in the conversations that we have, and I don't even know if you're aware of this, but sometimes like you apologize for it in the conversation. And I'm just like, bitch, you don't gotta apologize to me. But like I receive it, and I definitely see it and can so empathize and relate to it so much.
Yeah, it is a lot of navigating also like racial politics in regards to who can speak this way and like what people perceive you to speak as. Like people have told me before, like, well, you shouldn't be speaking AV. And for me, it's like, oh, I'm not speaking AV. It's just the lingo of my hometown. And so like, right. I would never say that I'm speaking AV because I am not. So we have then conversations about that. And so it is a lot of conversations in regards to just really understanding how linguistics can change depending on your racial background, of your socioeconomic background, of really where you're coming from in the country. And then they have this idea that, oh, he's closer with them, so I can't trust him. But it's like, no, it's because I'm adjusting to how you would perceive what I'm saying. And even in my daily life, I do that with people who I interact with too. Like my housemates before, I asked them specifically like, hey y'all, like how you want me to talk with you? Like I can talk with you like this, or I can talk with you like this, and like whatever way you would prefer me to speak to you so you better understand what I'm trying to convey, I can do that for you. And they're like, we prefer the latter. And I was like, okay, good.
Well, I got a question, Vince. Why you ain't never tell me that? Why I only get the Vince from the 2-0, the 2-1-9 Vince? I ain't never get that option.
Well, you want basic thank you, Vince? I can do that too.
Okay, I'm sorry, Hannah.
Something,
No, please stop apologizing. Okay, this sorry. Can be an open conversation. You are... No, don't apologize when okay, I tell fine, you to stop apologizing. All right. No, it's something I never thought, because when I tell people, like with casting, for instance, if we don't mind staying in casting for one more second, the advice I always give is I'm like, well, I walked into the room and I was my most unfiltered self. Like I said, the first thought that came into my head and I kept doing that and that worked for me. But I guess when the room doesn't reflect you in any way, how do you be your most unfiltered self to try to get on the show while understanding the room is not reflecting you at all?
If I can jump in, I think that what is interesting about Vince and I is that for us, it's so easy for a room that does not look like us or speak our language or, you know, reflect us. It's so easy for them to categorize us as, oh, they're the gay. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like Richard Hatch was the first winner of Survivor. So like, you know, oh, there's this, now mind you, you know, not stereotype, but there is this archetype of the gay player. And Survivor is pretty dead on with the archetype of a gay white man player. It is when we get into the other that they, I don't want to say miss the mark, but they do not know how to categorize us. So I can imagine like with Vince and even in myself, like, you know, they wanted that flamboyant, girl, woo ye, I'ma kill it. I'ma get with the girl. Like mm-hmm. That's the gay that they wanted. And I didn't know any better. I gave them that because like I wanted to play Survivor. I think that it gets a little more tricky, when, you know, we talk about archetypes. I did not have an archetype. Mm-hmm. I was the first, and let me just say this because I like to say it with my chest. I was the first openly gay black player to play, and I'm on season 28. Okay. That's 10 years in the game. Vince on his season is the first player of his kind, and how far down, you know, and for me, again, I get like passionate about this is because I feel like survivors should know. The first winner was Richard Hatch. They should know the gay community loves Survivor. And it just is so astonishing to me that the lack of diversity in the gay community. And again, like when I was talking earlier about like, you know, the gay community really is a white gay man's community. They feel like, oh, we'll put a white gay man on. We are meeting the quota. Like, no, there is diversity in the community. And Vince and I are seen on the latter end. We are minorities in that own community, and we're already minorities in our own society. So it is definitely an interesting thing. And so I definitely feel like with casting, they wanted those tropes and those like stereotypical, like for me, which was always so bothersome. And I don't know if you got this, Vince, but whenever I would do interviews, they would always ask me, who did I find hotter, Jeremiah or LJ? None. Okay. Like, I like attractive men. None. And like, you know, it really bothered me. And for me, I always were like, I don't look at LJ or Jeremiah like that. They're my brothers. I was very aware of where they were trying to go with that. And I did not want to be that gay. You know, I knew that I was going to be the first, and I really wanted to represent myself. And something that Vince and I also talked about was the fact that, like, I don't know what the PC term for this is, but like, you know, we are like cisgendered, queer men of color, but we are, it's flamboyant. It's like feminine. Like, you know, there is, we have some of those characteristics, and a heterosexual like man does not know how to quantify that. And, you know, for me, like I have very feminine characteristics. I have very masculine characteristics. I'm not a cookie cutter, like you put me in a box. And I feel like for me on my tribe, I know I'm all over the place, but you know, you asked me to be on here, Hannah, so I'm just going to go all over the place. But
stop apologizing and justifying. I love you, and I'm thrilled to be podcasting with you both. So you do not have to. Yeah, keep going.
For me, I felt like, you know, the one gay that was present in the Survivor community was Colton. And I remember, like, I don't want to be anything like Colton. I don't want to be nasty like Colton. I want to be, like, physical. And I remember that, like, that was a huge thing for me. I wanted to go out there and show that I'm physical, show that I can help around camp. And anybody knows that if you watch Survivor, like, you know, the weakest people at camp, the people that don't do anything, they're always targeted first. And so, like, I did not want that for me. However, because I am a queer person of color, the rules are different. Because now that their expectation of what they know of the gay stereotype of the gay is to be lazy, the fact that I am not, the fact that I am actually contributing, the fact that I'm actually, like, you know, now it is a hindrance to me.
Yes, it's a threat. You're a threat now.
And now I'm a threat. How am I a threat? Like, okay, 10, 9, 8, 7, 10. I gotta calm myself down. Sorry. But it's like, how am I a threat now? Bitch, I'm getting you your water every morning. I'm like, you know, I'm a threat. But yet you can never tell me I'm a threat. You smile in my face, but yet you go and tell the girl. Like, it's just like, we are damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't. And again, I am not saying that to be like, oh, that's why I didn't do good in my life. I'm just saying, like, this, no. Like, Survivor is, and I don't know how you feel, Vince, but Survivor was very much my experience in my everyday life. Like, that's how it worked. That's how school was. Like, it was just very reassuring to me that, like, bitch, we have a lot of work to do just to, like, exist in our own right. And so it just is like, so again, when we're talking about the archetype, there was no archetype. Bitch, I am the archetype because I'm the first openly gay black player. And you didn't even get to see me shine because I watched Survivor. I knew what Survivor was like. I want to help. And I could never break in to the guys. They could not, they could, and again, I'm getting chills because when we say representation matters, they could not see me in a leadership role.
Same.
Although everything I did was to show them that I want to be with you. They had never seen anything like it. And automatically to them, it was a threat.
Yeah, I would also jump in and say that I had the same experience. Like, when we got on that beach, I was like, I am at the bottom. Like, I know my body, so I also came in packing weight. That was the wrong move, apparently, now. So, you know, it was like a queer Asian man who was also, like, thicker and, like, and so in my tribe, I was, like, the least physically fit looking person, but people didn't know that I, like, am a runner. I ran 5 to 7 miles every other day. Like, it was just like, oh, okay. So I knew at the beginning, like, I have to hustle. And so that's why, like, in the episode, you'll see, like, Tom being like, yeah, I'm so, like, taken aback or impressed by Vince because he out here chopping down trees and, like, chopping bamboo and teaching people how to do everything. Cause literally some of those people are like, who raised you? Like, what? Like, they thought you could eat fish without descaling the fish. And I was like, what is this? And so I was like, in my opinion, I was like butt hauling ass at camp. And like that, like for us, I think, especially as queer men of color in particular, or just queer, people of color in general, is that like, for me, at least, I was so focused on making sure that people saw I was an asset at camp that actually impacted how I was able to interact with other players.
Yes.
Because you out there gathering wood, you out there like making sure the fire is on, you out there fishing, you out there teaching them how to like scavenge for food, and then you don't have enough time to talk about strategy. And so it's very hard in that respect then to just like, to try to do anything else, because also like on my first night, like we were talking about preconceived notions or perceptions of people, and people told me automatically that they thought I was going to be a physical liability, that they thought I was going to be sassy, that they thought that I was like, you know, going to basically just be the stereotypical image of like the threat of Asian Americans in this country. And so I had to adjust real fast. Like I was like, I can't play that game. I can't be strategic. I can't blah, blah, blah. So then that's why I then retreated a little bit. And that's, and in my edit, you'll see that like at the very beginning, I wasn't like homeboy Vince on 219 until a bit further in, because I have to really adjust to talking with people and adjust my game. And that's the same when you talk with your producers, right? Like, if you're not comfortable with them yet, then how are you going to talk how you normally talk? And I love my producers, actually. Right. They're wonderful. But at the same time, it took like a bit of time to build that trust so that you can get to that point where you can tell your story and narrative in a way that is reflective of your community back home. So definitely like agree with everything Bryce has said, and especially your point, Bryce, that like you are your own archetype. I am my own archetype. Like, I think that's where like it's important to know when talking about archetypes, especially with the gay diaspora community, that there is no one, I think there's no one identity that, you know, and no one definition that encapsulates an entire group of people. And so you don't take the time to truly understand the various lived experiences of people like me, people like Bryce. You continue like systems of privileges that reduce individuals down into stereotypes that oftentimes then result in us being voted out early because the majority of people, you know, don't see the potential that you have beyond their created understanding of what queer bodies are. And as Bryce has said for a long time, and I think it's important to make a note of this too, that the openly queer folks on Survivor have been majority white queer individuals. I don't know who the first openly queer
and they do well.
Yes,
they do well. Like they do well. They can assimilate into the tribe. They can make the merge because they like, you know, and that for me is always so frustrating. And I don't mean to cut you off, but it's like they can assimilate. They've assimilated. We have not. We are still behind the times. And although it's 2021, people think that, oh no, we're accepting my son as a boy. Like, no, sis, I'm talking about people of color. And I don't know if you experienced this, Vince, but like microaggressions, when we talk about microaggressions and people in tribes, it's hard to describe when a microaggression is faced to you as a compliment. Oh, look at Vince. He doing so good. And for me, it was my microaggression was, oh, like Bryce is really athletic. Bryce is really good around camp. And it's like, I know because it's like I have lived this life as a gay man my whole life. So I know what that means, but you can't pop off. You can't like tell them it puts you at such, and I don't want to, like liability isn't the right word, but it puts you at such a like disadvantage because it's like, I know what a microaggression is. And even though it's formed as a compliment and I'm supposed to be like, oh my God, you see me as a man, get out of here. Wow. But deep down inside, I know what it is. However, I came to win $1 million. So I can't just pop off because then I'm giving them what they already expect. Like, it's like this, like catch 22. You are literally damned if you do, literally damned if you don't. And then when it's time to vote, you're on the tribe, that's all white. Baby, they want, like, it's inevitable that they are going to go for you. And so that is the one thing that I always, and I don't know how you feel, Vince, I always hold in regard is that, like, I knew that they were targeting me. However, all of this, what I just explained to you, I was holding that in. Like, I don't want to give them this. I don't want to give them that. But shit, looking back, Spicy Brycey should have came out because y'all were going for me anyway. And here I am trying to hold myself to the society's standard when I should have just been myself, when I should have just let Spicy Brycey come out and let up have it.
Yeah.
And that honestly, sorry. I don't know why I'm getting so emotional, but again, when I like on my podcast, I say, be yourself, live in your truth. And that's what I mean. Like in that moment, had I just said, I'm done with shit. LJ Jeremiah, let me tell you about yourself. Who knows what could have happened because of that? However, I'm holding myself to the society. I'm like, oh, I can't be that black gay guy that's on here. I can't be that. I don't want to do that. Like, let me just be quiet and let them just talk about me. And then, you know, let me go to tribal and give them a dot, 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 dot. But child, the dot, 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 dot is on me. Okay, sorry. I mean, I'm not sorry. Sorry, but yeah.
I experienced very similar things. And, you know, I got a lot of flack for the first episode, because I went off when I came back to camp and I was like, how the did my name come up? And right. People were just like, I mean, he knew better. He shouldn't have done that. But I know that I was cast because I am a person. I'm not afraid to bring up situations. I'm not afraid of confrontations. And that's why I said in my interviews, that's who I am. That's who I am in my daily work too. Like, I'm not afraid to bring up problems that I see or issues that I see in policies, in the ways in which, you know, institutions function. I am not afraid. And so I thought a lot, you know, because I think people just think it's like you go from tribal and then you go to like, you're back to your island. It's like 10 minutes. It's like, nah, no, it's like a long time. So I was thinking a lot about like, how should I approach this? Should I just be like nice Vince, basic Becky Vince, or am I going to be my real self? And that's why when I came back, I was like, nah, I'm going to be Vince for the 209. And, yes. And it went off. And also it was very quick. It wasn't like as long as it may have seemed. But it was because, you know, you have to understand too, as what Bryce was saying, you are in situations where you know you're at the bottom and you know that people are coming for you and you know that you have shown loyalty, especially to certain individuals. And you're just like, what is gonna happen? Because as Bryce mentioned or alluded to, people and other folks have said this before on the podcast, people tend to gravitate towards folks or individuals they find a lot of similarities with what they're comfortable yeah. with. And when you are the first, like when you are Bryce and when you are me, people don't know how to be comfortable with you. And you out there trying to be comfortable with them. And it's a one-sided comfortability yes. kind of relationship here.
You're making them comfortable. Yes. We are making you comfortable. You're not making us comfortable.
Yeah. And you really have to like learn how to adjust to those different changing like social interactions, because also at the end of the day, even though you may not have a lot of connections with people, you do get close to the folks on your tribe. Like that's not taking away yeah. from anybody, but you're with them so long. So it does create this weird, like, how do I navigate this as like a person of color? And then on top of that, like you're queer too. And what I like to tell a lot of folks too is like, you know, it seems like the creator, God, Buddha, whoever you believe made you, like they were just like, Vince, you don't get to choose where you're going to struggle. You're just going to struggle, you know?
You're going to struggle at all.
Yeah. You're going to be born as a minority within a minority. And then on top of that, we're going to make you gay too. And they're just like, you're going to struggle. We're going to make you just a little smart, you know, just a little bit, but you're going to struggle. No choice. And so when it comes to Survivor, that's how I felt too, was that like, you already struggling as the only person of color or the only person from your ethnic or racial background. And then you also like the only queer person of your experience too. And on my tribe, it was very odd because we had three queer people. And unfortunately, you know, those relationships didn't hold through. But, I think that also goes to show again, as what Bryce said before, comfortability and like being closer with certain folks, right? Like Elaine and I connected early on, but then it's like, why did you choose Tom over me? Same thing with Missy. It was like Missy and I connected early on. Mm. And like, why did you choose to go with other people instead of me? And so it's a lot of very, very complicated social relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many blind spots. Cause I feel like part of why I don't, you know, outside of podcasting, I love the storytelling aspect of like what it's like to be on this show, but talking about Survivor itself in some ways has stopped being fun because there's just a lot of anger that comes up when I talk about some of the stuff that goes on when you experience Survivor. But like listening to you guys talk is just like highlighting some of my blind spots. It's also like if everyone is like Survivor's a microcosm of society, but like whose society is it right. a microcosm of if you don't even see yourself in it?
Yeah.
So I can get frustrated being like, well, within this microcosm of society, here's the things I faced as this kind of person, but it's not even representing your community at all up until this point. So it's not even a microcosm. It's like taking you out of and putting your, yeah, wow.
Yeah. And I think very similar. Very similar to what you're saying, Hannah. Like everybody seems to believe that, you know, survive, when you go on Survivor, you're creating a new community, a new society. And then they also say it's a microcosm of our real world. And then it's like, you realize the disconnect that you're making there. Like, you cannot have a microcosm of a real world within a new world. Like everything that is present right. in our world is going to transfer on over. And as Bryce mentioned yes. earlier, in terms of like trying to connect with men or cis hetero men on the show, it was very hard for me to like, to break into that circle of men as well, because they never saw me as the physical asset that I could have been or that I was. You know, they didn't believe that I was the first one out on the first challenge. They didn't believe that I was the person who like untied the last of the knots on that ladder. Like it was just, and they didn't believe that like I ran the ladder under the water. It was just like, oh, like Vince is here. And so when you look at the ways in which, you know, right. ideas of masculinity and ideas of like what it means to be a man in tandem with sexuality, how that plays out in this microcosm, we're always going to be on the outskirts of
right.
that larger group of men. And then you have women who are like, oh, but they can't be your sis though. Like no, because they're not a woman. And then you're like, well, who am I gonna work with? Like the men didn't want to work with me, and now the women are like, right. oh, we can't trust him. So you're like, where am I?
But so much for listeners who haven't played Survivor before, so much of that early game is about fitting. It's just about perception, fitting in and being with right. the group. I had, well, everything out there, perception is reality, but I had a former player tell me before I went out, I like hung out with this former, he was a winner, and he was like, okay, here's the thing. Early on, if everyone goes in the water, get in the fucking water. If everyone's on the beach, get in the beach. And I remember a cyclone, my season was coming, and I was like, only idiots would go in the water. But everyone started going in the water, so I said, all right, let's fucking do this. Guess what? The two people that didn't go in the water, they were out of the first vote. Like, that's how, like, fundamentally fitting in and being with the group is a part of it. And if you're
fundamentally don't fit in,
if you immediately don't fit in a way that ties to your identity that you can't change or downplay or hide, I mean, that's just, I just got in the fucking water, even though a storm was coming. That's something I could change.
And we got in the water, but we were so different.
Right. We got in the water and we still was otherized.
We got in the water and we were so different fish.
Yes. Okay. We were birds, okay. not fish.
Oh my gosh.
My yoga studio is a temple to flexibility. And so is my business. Thanks to my Amex Business Gold Card, it automatically flexes with my monthly spending so I can get extra points on purchases like my Metro card and my new stereo system. Check it out. Let's stretch those bonds.
Earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories each month with an Amex Business Gold Card. Terms and points cap apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-gold. Built for business by American Express.
This episode is brought to you by Tinder. With spring and festival season on the way, now is a fantastic time to get on Tinder and find your twin flame. You know, someone you can match festival outfits with, a boo with similar music tastes, or maybe someone who can introduce you to something new. Just make sure to throw a few likes their way, or you'll never know. Explore all of the possibilities for yourself on Tinder. It starts with a swipe. Download Tinder today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I did ask for questions late, but we do have fan questions. But before we get to that, because we'll mix in fan questions and then just continue the conversation. You both were a part of like approaching Survivor about increased diversity for 41 and 42. Are you hopeful? I know for me, when I was like so impressed, because basically, you know, the Black Survivor Alliance and then a bunch of people, petition and just told stories and like opened up in a way that like shouldn't have been necessary to make change, but like clearly was. So I'm just curious, like, if yeah, if you're hopeful for future seasons that are going to be more diverse. I know for me, I was like, I hope the behind the scenes stuff is just as diverse now, too. But yeah, I'm just curious moving forward.
I'm very hopeful. I always share this story, and I don't mean it to be a negative story, but it's my experience when I was participating in the groups with like the other Black alums to talk about Change and Survivor. We had a big open forum, and you know, in the forum we were going around introducing ourselves, and like, you know, I got to me and I'm like, hey, I'm Bryce Isaiah from season 28. I'm a Black gay man. I'm really excited to be a part of this. And it was very quickly said to me, our commonality here is Black, and we need to focus on that. And you know, coming from a quote unquote survivor legend, that was like very crushing to me. And it really just was so like, like, you know, it's at this point, 2020, like people don't understand or understand intersectionality. I'm not just a Black man. Okay. I'm not just a gay man. I'm a Black gay man. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. And so, yes, I am very hopeful. And yes, I, you know, was a part of the meetings, meeting with Jeff and CBS, a part of myself, Wendell, Jatia, Julia Carter, Jamal, Ramona, Sabrina. And, yeah, it was really, and you know, I said my piece about like the representation that I want to see of like POC LGBTQ plus. And, you know, it's a stepping stone, and we like, you know, we got to get there. But, you know, the fact that I was in the room, even though some survivors did not feel as though I was worthy to be in the room, I was in the room and I was able to have my voice heard and, you know, to speak from my existence. Like, I'm not just speaking from a Black man's perspective. I'm speaking from a gay Black man's mm-hmm. perspective. And I think that it's important for you guys to understand that, that there's a difference. And I'm not taking away from anything, but I just say that to say that, yes, I hope for change. I hope that it is a more diverse cast. But if this is a utopia, a euphorium, why can't we hope for better? Like, why can't we still push the, you know, I want to see more representation for Vince. I want to see, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there is just still so much more. So, yes, I'm really excited. I was really excited at CBS's response to us. They were very open. They committed to 50% BIPOC. And, you know, in front and, you know, behind the camera. So I'm excited. But I always just share that anecdote. And again, not for it to be negative, but just for even people to understand that, like, when I say I'm a minority within a minority, like, you know, even in my own community, when we're supposed to be rallying around, I'm just simply stating my identity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that room, 20 people had must have went already, said their name, whatever. It got to me. Now, all of a sudden, it's a question and answer. Excuse me, it's more people to go. Like, why? Like, what? You know, like, and how does that make me feel? Like, how do you think that, like, you know, so I'm excited for it. I just, you know, but for me, there's still work to be done. And I feel like within this last 2 years, I really have found my voice. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you felt, Vince, growing up, but I remember, like, I never wanted to be that person that's like, I'm gay. Like, you know, I never wanted to be like, I just wanted to just be myself. But the older I get, even though I still am in my early to late 20s, I realize the importance of representation.
He's 19, everybody. Okay. He's 19 years old. Okay. He can't even drink.
I got a fake ID, though. I got a fake ID. But I do recognize the importance of me being proud of who I am, because there are younger people that, mm-hmm. whether I see it or not, that look up to us. And I have to be proud of myself, not just for myself, but for the other people behind me. We all want to play again. You know, yeah. It's like, mind you, first of all, I'm waiting for the season of all pre-merge boots, yes. Unfinished business.
Yes.
But, you know, I've been very vocal. I don't feel like I ever honestly got to play Survivor again. However, I knew speaking up about, you know, our experiences and really calling CBS out could potentially blacklist me. And I had some soul searching to do, and through counsel with my mom, and, you know, I realized that I was like, you know what, whether I like how I got to play, I got to play. And for me personally, the next gay Black player, male, that plays, I want to make it a better game for him. So you know what? I'm going to use my voice. I'm going to speak up because, like, you know what? That's who I'm speaking up for, because clearly no one was speaking up for me. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that was the decision that I made. And I wanted to, like, use my voice. And ever since then, I've been trying to just amplify anyone that's other, you know, gay, straight, trans, like, you know, it's just, you know, anyone that doesn't necessarily have a archetype, you know, I want to, like, amplify them. So that's my little two piece.
Yeah. I also just want to say, like, a big shout out to the Black alumni of Survivor. Like, it is because of them that this has happened. And I think it's definitely moving in the right direction. Like, it's incredibly important, you know, when we also say BIPOC, that we also very much will focus on Native Indigenous voices. Like, to me, it still boggles my mind that, you know, Survivor has been filmed in the Pacific on islands with Indigenous people, and we have never had a Samoan on. We have never had a Tongan person on. We have never had, you know, I don't think, like, when it comes to, like, a tomorrow person on. So it's like, how do we continue, or how does the show continue to utilize these places and to capitalize off of these places, yet we have never actually brought somebody of those backgrounds to play the game? And how does that then affect the overall lived understanding of who belongs in this country and belongs in games like Survivor that are supposed to kind of, like, you know, replicate subsections of our country?
I think the Black alumni have made the show better in every way. I think every viewer should be thankful that we get more diverse casts and that we're pushing Survivor to have, I don't know, more than, like, all white male editors. I don't, you know, basics like that.
Right.
So actually, the thing you just mentioned goes in perfectly with our first fan question. Thank you to the people who sent in questions. Every time on Just My Archetype, it's just y'all help carry the podcast and send in really great questions. So this first question is from @IdleHalf. This person was very excited about you two as guests and, oh my God, amazing. I would love to hear Vince talk about how he grappled with Indigenous appropriation and colonialism inherent to the show. I think I've seen him talk about these topics on his Insta. It's an issue I really struggle with as a fan. So no Indigenous representation. And then if you want to touch on, yeah, this sort of appropriation and colonialism, I know in earlier seasons it could be really bad. Some of the challenges even, but yeah, I'll give you the mic.
Yeah. So I am not an expert, at all when it comes to the Native Indigenous communities in our country and our neighboring sister countries. But, you know, the work that I do, I was the Asian American and Pacific Islander liaison to Stanford. And in that work, I've learned a lot about really how to advocate for our Pacific Islander students and those communities. And my close friend, very, very great friend now, Sharon, is Native, and she was a Native liaison, and she's taught me so much also about the Native community. And I think it's incredibly important for us to recognize the need to really address the wrongs that Native communities have had to endure and continue to have to endure, and the ways in which our country and many institutions and programs and, you know, sometimes large corporations continue to take advantage of these lands that were originally not ours to begin with. And so I think that's where it's important to have Native Indigenous representation, so that stories and narratives like behind those communities can come out, right? So somebody talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women, or somebody talking about the children and boarding schools and things like that, like, to bring awareness to that. And when it comes to, I think, shows like Survivor, you know, I came in with this thought that Survivor was going to be a platform for me to speak about my communities and the social causes that I was very much so, like, trying to push. And so if you look at all of the things that have been promoted of me, like, it's very much so along those lines. And I think it does get very hard when you come into a game like Survivor and expect it to be that and forget that it is a reality TV show. You have to balance both of those and to understand, like, how can we kind of meet at the middle? And so for fans who are Native or Indigenous and really want to, you know, showcase their stories in the communities, I wholeheartedly, like, I support you in applying for this show and all those things, but you also have to take it with a grain of salt, you know, and know that, like, there may be aspects that you may not be able to talk about or may not be aired. But just know that, like, your presence itself creates those larger reimaginings of, like, what I could be in spaces like this. So most definitely for those Native Indigenous kiddos or potential contestants out there, like, y'all apply. Yeah.
Yeah, just being representation, like you guys have been talking about, when there's zero representation, there's, like, no place to even start a conversation when it doesn't exist on the show. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got lots of great questions. Nate Carden at Nate, three Nates, asked a bunch of questions, but... Yeah, I'll just read them and then you can address whatever part of the question. He said, when you're reduced to the basics, alliances seem to form based on common backgrounds. How hard is Survivor for queer people of color when they have no one else like them on their tribe? How was Bryce supposed to survive on a tribe of white Southerners? And how much pressure is it to feel like you have to represent for folks like you on top of everything else required for Survivor? Straight white men can just play Survivor without all this stress and pressure to contend with. We've talked, first of all, Nate, we've touched on a lot of this, yes. So way to have your finger on the pulse of this podcast. Nate.
Yeah. First of all, shout out to Nate for understanding that. Like, yes, how am I supposed to survive? Anything that I do or say is... Yeah. And at the same time, I've got to go out there and be a positive image for my community. So no, definitely it was a struggle. I don't like to say, oh, that's the reason why I did not do well. Like, I, am an adult and I can take accountability. And you know, it is what it is. That's just, unfortunately, the cards that were dealt to me. Is it fair? No. But is it real life? Is it my everyday life when I go to work every day? Yes. Is it my everyday life in this real world? Yes. And I think the way that we change it is to have more representation, to have more diversity. Like, you know, in a returning season, how many openly gay black men have they brought back for the returning season? I'll wait, you know, so.
Yeah. But also, no one's ever saying, like, this is the reason I lost. You're just saying, let's speak to this so that we can improve it. And because it exists in society, like, I know for me, like, some of the sexism I talk about, it's not because I'm like, this is why I lost. No, I was a nutty 24-year-old. I lost for many reasons. But, like, you know, sexism was a part of that. No need to justify that. I totally understand that.
Maybe I just get defensive because anytime I ever speak out about it, I always get like 10 DMs. You suck at Survivor. That's why. So it's like I be right, like spicy Brycey be ready to come out. But no, you're absolutely right.
Oh, I get defensive too. Yeah. I get so defensive. I'm like, let me just talk about gender bias without you telling me that, you know, X, Y, or Z. I'm like, I know all that shit.
I think another part of this that we should talk about as well is socioeconomic status, right? Like, you cannot decouple being black and queer or being Southeast Asian and queer away from growing up poor as well. And how that affects not only your time in the game itself, but even how you interact with production. Like, I was so scared. I was like scared for my life that if I do anything wrong, they were going to pull me. And so at Ponderosa, I didn't talk with nobody. I followed the rules to a T. And like, and so when you listen to like pre-game stuff and you listen to what people have said about me, they're like, I have no read on him. Like, I don't know. But
same people, with me. Yeah, same.
Yes. But people don't
same.
Know.
Same.
As a poor kid, you grow up as a poor and Asian kid, I would say. And it's similar, I'm sure, with the poor and other people of color. Like, you grow up being told, don't ask for more. You grow up with being told you better be okay with what you're given. And so
be grateful for what you got.
Mm-hmm. So when you're given an opportunity like Survivor, you end up like just doing everything so that you stay on. And even at Ponderosa, you are so afraid that if I speak up, I'm gonna get taken out. I'm sure there are hundreds of people waiting to come in, so I'm gonna have to just be quiet, not interact with nobody, and that's it. And so that, like, the ways in which we have been conditioned, especially if you grow up poor as well, is that you have all of these layers. So it's not just that you're like Southeast Asian, you're Hmong American and gay, but you're Hmong American, gay and poor. And so there are all of these things that you have had to navigate to, like, get to where you are. And people take that as like, oh, he's just not like responsive to us or things like that. And then on top of that, for me, there is already a preconceived idea of like Asian bodies in this country being more well off, being privileged. And because of that, then, you know, I was actually told by folks who were voted out of LIRO, of Vokai, who came to Ponderosa, that the people who came over from LIRO didn't believe that I was low income. Like, they just didn't believe it. And then I was like, what? Yeah. Like, why would I make that up? And so it does create, you know, when you're looking at all these things, it's a lot of identities meshed together. And I just wanted to bring up the socioeconomic part because for me, I know that was a big thing. Like, it was big. Like,
no, I'm so glad that you brought that up. And for me, like, it speaks to the privilege. When I have heard stories of how people interacted with the producers, like refusing interviews, walking off. But mind you, but here's the thing, like, and I say that just to say, because it's like, that could have helped their game. Like, you know, like me, I was just like, whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you. Whatever you need, like, sure, what you need, what you want me to do. And it's like, you know, because that, like Vin said, that is like, that was so me. Be grateful that you're here. And it's like, you know, even in preseason, when I asked like Alexis and like, you know, Jeff, for like, what did y'all think of me? They were like, oh, we didn't think anything of you because like, you didn't give us anything. Damn right. I was reading my little book, listening to my little, my Walkman. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I like, again, Hannah, see, this is why I wanted Vince on, because Vince is smart. Okay.
No,
like,
you guys are fantastic. This might be a dumb question, but when I talk about gender bias, I'm like telling, I want to talk about gender bias because I want it to be easier for women who go on the show, but I also want like men to be like, well, how are you perceiving what a leader is, and how does gender play a part of that? What, like, who's making the decisions for men? So I guess for me, because a lot of these are blind spots for me, and I know I have a lot of privilege in like a lot of these areas. How can future, you're speaking to these things to pave the way for future, like, queer people of color, hopefully contestants who are on the show, but like, how can people who have that privilege, like, break down that privilege out there? And like, how can we be better?
So let me just speak to this. I also feel like, we need to break down that. And again, not all, like, I'm only speaking for myself, but for whatever, we need to break down the stereotype that femininity is weak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's number one. Like, for me, on my issue, on my tribe, was that Jeffra and Alexis could not see me as a leader. And that's just because I was myself, whatever my characteristics were. Like, I saw the game. I saw what LJ was doing. And like, you know, they could not see me, like, physically, because they just saw me as the whatever Bryce said they saw me. They could not see me as that role. And so, therefore, they didn't feel comfortable going with me. They ended up going with LJ. And did any of them win? But anyway, I just say that to say is that, like, you know, I feel like how you could help, or you got to check your bias at the door. And sometimes, like, you know, compassionate curiosity. Like, you know, it's okay to have these bias, and it's okay to, like, maybe ask yourself, like, am I maybe judging Vince because he think he that bad bitch from the 219? Mm-hmm. Or am I really giving him the opportunity? And I think that, like, you know, having that compassionate curiosity and checking yourself could really go a long way. Because for me, it was that the people on my tribe never saw someone like me and could not see me in that space. Meanwhile, I'm cooking y'all food every day. Meanwhile, I'm stoking a fire every night. Meanwhile, I built the shelter. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. two challenges that I played and I performed well, I am showing you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really like breaking down these stereotypes. It's really having these conversations. It's really actually, and again, respectfully, it's not on us to change you. Yeah. Like, you know, you have to do the work for yourself. I am still showing up as my authentic, real self. It is up to you, not you per se, but I'm just saying, like, you to, like, question yourself. And don't get me wrong, like, I've got my own bias. I got my own shit that I have as well. But I, like, I check myself. I, like, I have open dialogues with myself. Like, I'm like, no, you, that's wrong. You can't think like that. But again, it's like, you know, the onus is on, like, again, and it's in these hyper conversations that maybe we could open people's mind. And again, like, you know, and again, for even me and Vince, and this is off topic, but this is very on topic for me to go off topic. Like, when me and Vince were talking, like, we actually were talking about, and again, this is like a taboo subject. And tell me, Vince, if you don't like, if you hear me saying something, like, but Vince and I were like talking about like this taboo subject of like top and bottom mm-hmm. and like the gay community and how, like, no, but I mean, like, how it really does, like literally, like, it's so taboo, but it like stops people's blessings, because it's like, you want to be like in this one box. And it's just like, you know, and like me and Vince were just having this open conversation about like how, you know, I won't go into detail, but like how the perception of that, how like, mm-hmm. you know, the stereotype. And even in the conversation that I had with Vince, that conversation, he really opened my eyes. Like, he was like, no, bitch, I think you need to challenge yourself, because I feel like you are limiting yourself. And it's just, and again, I say that to say that, like, it's not up to us. It's not up to us to change you guys, or not you guys, but anyone else. But it's like, it's even ingrained in us mm-hmm. that we've got to change ourselves. We have to, like, you know, I have to stop saying that, like, because I have, like, you know, I am flamboyant in some aspects and have feminine ways. I have to stop saying that I'm weak, because I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like, race me. So mm-hmm. I'm from Philly, bitch. We fight. What's up? Like, you know, like, I ain't no punk. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've been around people and they're just like, wow, like, you've got very masculine characteristics. I'm from Philly. Like, I had to fight my life. I'm the youngest of four brothers. Mm-hmm. They used to put me in a suitcase and, like, throw me down the steps. Like, I've had to fight. Like, don't let this fool you. But again, I think that, like, you know, as a society, and even, like, me as a person, I sometimes believe the stereotypes, and like, we've got to do better and we've got to show better.
Yeah. And I just want to say, Hannah, that's a great question to ask. And I think that is a larger question to ask Survivor. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to do better as a contestant, especially if your view of Survivor is, I'm gonna do what it takes to win the million.
Right.
If you are in that mindset, there is no reason for you in that mindset to try to understand people, or to like try to really open yourself to supporting others. Because if Survivor wants this to be kind of like an experiment and to see how people can develop and change, you know, seeking those individuals who are open to that, I think that is where the change has to happen, because you can come in with those ideas, with those like socially minded, like philosophies. And that's what I came in with. You know, I came in saying I wanted to work with women. I came in saying that I was not going to vote out a woman first in my tribe. And I went forward with that. I fought to make sure that Elaine was not voted out first. I fought to make sure that Karishma stayed in. I fought to make sure that she felt included. I fought to make sure that the women stayed together. And that backfired on me.
And where was they at for you?
Yeah. And where were they for me? They voted, all five of them voted for me. So when you come in as a a very conscious person about like supporting communities, like, I didn't want to vote out Karishma because I know that the South Asian narrative is non-existent in popular media, and I was like, I cannot vote her out. Like, this is important. I have to keep her in. For Missy, I was like, there ain't no way I'm gonna vote Missy out. And we gotta keep this story going with us. Like, after she came out with me, and I was like, crying in my confessional. I was like, oh my god, she came out to me. It's me so much. So so the question of asking, like, how do we do better? It really is a question of whether or not you want to put like socially minded and conscious ideologies at the forefront of your game. And when you do that, sometimes what happens is that you get voted out early because people, you know, and that's what a lot of fans have been saying too, like, oh, Vince sucks because he wouldn't work with men. And it's like, no, I'm willing to work with men, but I think as men, cis or straight, that, you know, we have to wake up every day and wake up every day on the beach, ready to challenge and dismantle the patriarchy and the systems that dictate the lives and bodies of and stories of our moms and sisters and our aunties and our cousins and anybody who identifies as female, both cis and trans. Like, we have to wake up ready to challenge those. And at times in games like Survivor, you're stuck in this middle of like, which side do I choose? Like, my morals are here and I can support them in this way, or I can support myself getting further in the game in this way. And so it really comes down and it boils down to where you want to be and where your morals are. And a lot of people check that box out of the door. They like chuck it out. They're like, my morals out the door. And so when you play the game like that, of course, it's going to get very hard. And people, I think even people outside the game, they don't understand when I say that, like, I wanted to work with women. They're just like, oh, you're not a woman. And it's like, I know I'm not, but we gotta support women to like move this game forward. We have to support people of color to move this game forward. And so I thank you a lot for that question. It really jogged my mind about that portion that I
no, it's it, both of your, I really appreciate both of your answers. And like, I wonder too, like, I would challenge the idea that it's like just on Survivor, because I feel like in life you're faced with similar decision. I understand that Survivor is a heightened thing in which there's $1 million and everyone's like, I'll do whatever it takes. But there's an aspect of that in life. And I think.
Yeah. So when I
say representation,
yeah, I don't have, it's not a full thought.
Yeah. When I say with Survivor, I mean like it's on the image of Survivor, you know? Like, yeah. Survivor continues to be a game where it's like, especially now because it's changed a lot. It's now like very cutthroat. It's like, you gotta cut other people before they cut you, as opposed to like, let's get strong alliances and move forward. So the game is always changing, and it's changing into ways that don't necessarily promote that idea of like, we have to support each other, and especially folks who are coming from underrepresented groups.
I guess I think of it as like, and this leads into my next question before we get back to the fan questions. It's like, there's production, there's the cast, and then there's like the audience element. And we talked about you guys getting cast, and we sort of talked about your experience being on the show with people. But do you have any feelings about like audience? You've mentioned little comments here and there about like, oh, someone will say this. Do you have like a specific perspective being a queer person of color and having an audience that is very mixed politically and like has a very strong opinions? Did you have a specific experience? I wanted to give you the opportunity to.
My experience was that the gays came out for me. They showed out and showed my support. To my surprise, I was so surprised at how supportive. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a troll and a hater, but my support outweighed the hate. And again, it's so surprising to me that like Survivor has such a strong LGBTQ+ fan base. Why is the diversity not reflected? That's what I say. Like, for me, that was surprising. Like, I just knew I was getting ready to like get eaten alive in the comments. But to my surprise, like, I was like, people loved me. Like, they supported me. Like, you know, there is not many, and I say this respectfully, there's not many third boots that can be in a position where I am at right now in the Survivor community. Take that for what you may. And like, you know, but like that, you know, like people don't remember people from like you, whatever. And so like, for me, that it's just a testament to like, you know, the community, like really wanting to support me, which is why I always try to support my community. And I always try to reach out, but I'm just saying that like that was the surprising thing to me, that it was so LGBTQ+ friendly.
Yeah. Mine was very mixed. Talking like the queer LGBTQ issues and identities are not big, are new topics, especially in the Hmong community. So I was faced with a bunch of people who were very supportive, of course, but then also a lot of toxic masculine ideas from people on social media being like, why did they cast this guy? He's not even a real man. He's going to get voted out first. Like, he's gay, blah, 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 bloob. And so that was a very interesting experience because it was from my immediate community itself, where like definitely people were supportive, but then also you find that there, when you are the first and when you are openly speaking about these identities, that it is very hard mm-hmm. for folks to adjust. And even before playing the game in the casting process, like my parents initially did not want me to go on. Because they did not want me to come out publicly on a national level. And when I was in Korea, I was closeted the whole time because there are no laws protecting against, there are no laws protecting LGBT folks from being fired from their workplaces. So I was closeted my entire time in Korea, and then came back to the States and was faced with a situation where I had come out to my family, my immediate family, but not the entirety of my family. So my parents are not sure. One of my younger sisters, well, she was also like, you know, why don't you think about mom and dad? They're not ready for this. But for me, it was like, this is an opportunity, as Bryce said, to like showcase you and showcase your story so that other kiddos or other people with similar experiences and narratives can see you and be like, oh, dang, like Vince out there doing it, like Bryce out there doing it. I'm gonna be able to do that too. Or like, I have so many shared experiences, with them that I can now find the strength of myself to continue, because it's hard to imagine. I think, to living life without a family. And for queer people, in particular, those who are coming from refugee communities, in my experience, like when our parents and our grandparents are running through the jungles, like trying to escape communism and trying to like just live, they didn't leave their kids behind, even in those situations. But in America, when their kids come out as queer, they abandon those kids. And so when you grow up hearing those narratives and hearing and being scared, and then being faced with the kind of vitriol when you get on a show like Survivor, it does make you question a lot. But I am so incredibly lucky to have like really supportive friends, family, other people who are Survivor fans as well, who have reached out and like been supportive. And it's also, you know, I got a message from a queer Khmer girl, a Cambodian girl who is darker skin tone as well. And she was like, I just want to say thank you so much, Vince, because it's the first time I actually saw myself in somebody who is Southeast Asian, who grew up poor, who is darker skin tone. Wow. And coming out, and she wants to apply. I was like, girl, apply. How many Cambodians? Zero.
Yes.
So when it comes to it, you know, I think regardless of how you have, kind of internalize what's happened post the show, it's always a good thing to remember that your story and your time, whether it is one episode, two, three episodes, it will have touched somebody at some point. And it's also important to know and to remember too that Survivor is a game show and a reality TV show that spans beyond America. That like people in other countries watch it.
It's wild. Yes. Oh my gosh. It's my favorite thing. I went to Australia and it was cool. You're across the world and they like know you. Yeah. It's crazy.
So in that sense too, you have to know that your presence on the show not only affects kids in America itself, but also kids outside. So, you know, I had a very mixed experience afterwards, and but I love my time on Survivor and I love my edit. It's like great in my opinion. But there are people who just like didn't take it well. And I was like, okay, y'all, like you try to do it. Yeah.
Right.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Start shopping now at CarMax.com.
I want to do one more fan question before we wrap it up. First of all, thank you to everyone who wrote in. There were a couple questions, a handful we didn't get to, and a lot of people were just like really hyped for this podcast. So before we get to this last thing, like, thank you. I can't thank you both enough, not just for coming on, but being so open, because like, it shouldn't be on you. But the more you're open, the more it pushes the needle forward in terms of these conversations and the show evolving and, you know, society evolving too, not just the reality show. So, Sarah Noir wrote in, and she wrote in about something I'm very passionate about. First, she said incredible guests. So just take in that she thinks you guys are incredible. Maybe not specific to the archetype, but I would love to hear Bryce talk a little bit about, and this could be you two, Vince, and me as well. Bryce talk a little bit about the mental health experience after the show and if production provides any support to contestants. So let's end on some mental health after the show. Let's do it, especially within this, you know.
Yeah, go
for it.
So I think that so they had a psychologist there, you know, they constantly were checking in, but as like a post follow up,
to be clear, to the listener, not while you're playing.
Like after when you had Ponderosa, you get voted off.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they definitely, there is a psychiatrist out there on Ponderosa before and after, but there is definitely not a lot of aftercare, and especially not a lot of aftercare for the pre-mergers. And I don't know how you feel, Vince, because, you know, Hannah ain't no pre-merger, so she don't know. But I would say Survivor is it's PTSD for me. I'm in therapy just because I need therapy for my life. I'm definitely a self-examiner. And, you know, for the longest time, I would see LJ and Jeremiah at charity events. And it was like fun and games, like, you know, in the beginning. And then at nighttime when I would drink, I would like cuss them out. And this has happened like more than like 5 times. So like, you know, and a long part of me, like, I was just like, okay, this is the normal. Like, I need to, like, you know, address this. And, you know, and I've had to work through it, like, through myself and different things. But that was just on my own. There is not a lot of, like, post-follow-up. I know in past and more current seasons, there is a lot better at it. And it's a lot for the players that go deeper in the game. And respectfully so, they should. But I do think that they forget about players like us that, like, you know, I've still uprooted my life.
If it makes you feel any better, they forget about us too.
Okay. I'll take your word.
The mental health. The mental health support after the show is severely lacking on all accounts. And every new contestant that reaches out to me and is like, I'm so excited to meet you. Literally, I had someone reach out to me from a future season being like, I'm such a fan. I'm so excited to meet you. And I was like, are you in therapy? Please say you're in therapy. Are you okay? How you doing?
Yeah.
So I would like to say in every aspect, but I hear you about the pre-merge being overlooked. I'm not denying that truth. I'm just saying every aspect could be
right.
Could be helped.
For the longest time, I was in a depression and I did not realize I was in a depression due to Survivor. And, you know, every Wednesday I'm watching and cheering. And then at night I'm like crying and like not like jealous, I would say envious, to watch people like get the opportunity that I felt like I did not get to have because I was Black and gay. And that's just how I felt. And so I, you know, through therapy and through working on myself, I had to let it go. Like I can't change the past. I can't, like, you know, and, you know, I always say I'm going to roll to a better Bryce, and that is a part of my road. And I have to realize that although as much as I love Survivor and maybe a short time I was on it, I do have to be aware that Survivor can be very triggering for me. And I have to put myself first. So there are sometimes like where there are some seasons that like I miss like 12 episodes. I don't even watch because it's like I have to put myself first, and I have to realize that like it's triggering for me in a way that it may not be triggering for someone else. But I mean, that's mental health, is that it's my mental health. And that's like, you know, what are the things that are for me? And so for the longest time, I didn't acknowledge it. I just thought like, oh, I'm just a hater. I'm hating on Vince out there. Why he get to be out there? And then like, you know, and I had to work through that. It's like, no, I'm not hating. I'm actually like, it's within my own experience. And I had to like give myself grace to say, what happened to me out there was out of my control. That was baby boy Bryce. And, you know, I can only grow from that. And those are the experiences that make me better. And who knows, will prepare me to play again or prepare the next black queer men to play, to kill it. And so, that's really my take on mental health, but it's real. You like, the game will really F you up 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, however long you're out there. It's the total package of the experience, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also want to say that, I think it's important now to look also at, potentially providing professor or hiring professionals, extra or additional professionals who identify within minority communities to also be psychologists on the show, because there are just things that we approach differently, you know, in the Asian American community, for example, like therapy or mental health issues are very taboo. And so people don't seek services and people don't seek to get that support. And even when you do take advantage of those things, like you may not be as fully forthright in describing everything that you're experiencing because you don't have that generational knowledge of seeking such services, you know? So, you know, I had a great connection with the therapist and the psychologist who was on our season, and like, she's wonderful. But I think, you know, one of the things I want to say too is for fans out there to remember that your words are going to people. Your words are sometimes burned into the minds of folks who have played this game, and it affects us in ways that you may not know, and affects us in ways that you might think it's small, but it is quite big. And then also just a lot of comments about like body and body shaming, as a thicker person out there in a season with like a bunch of buff guys, I then felt like, oh, I really have to get to a place of like looking quote unquote good for the reunion. And then that spiraled into a lot of other things. And I am seeking like help and support now, but like those are things that I want the fans to know as well, is that you don't understand what we go through on the island. You don't understand what we go through pre-island. You don't understand what we go through after. And of course there are folks who rewrite their stories and rewrite what happened on the show and things like that. But for the most part, our experiences are so unique in how we experience them that you cannot just say, oh, Bryce was a bad player, or like, oh, Vince was a bad player because of this. Like, you don't understand editing. You don't understand what we did out there. And so that's why I want to say also to fans out there, like, give grace, be nice, remember that your words do affect
us. Empathy. Yes. I love ending on that note, especially as we approach a new season and a new season with a much more diverse cast than we've ever had. Not only are you, and I'm not saying don't talk about Survivor and get excited and be funny, but maybe when you're making comments about players, think about what biases you have. Mm-hmm. Think about, approach things with empathy, especially as these casts become more diverse. I am very passionate, especially to alumni who have been through this shit before. Like when I got off the show, and I've said this a bazillion times, but I had this former player who I used to be a fan of, who was just brutal to me for many reasons. And she'd get all these likes, getting people all riled up against me. And I was like, I want to show that I can be funny and not cruel and get just as many likes as she can on a fucking tweet. And so like, to fans and to alumni who have been through it, like, let's continue to have fun, but like, yeah, show grace and show just some level of empathy. So
my motto is, Hannah, before you before you end, is that, because I'm a fan too. I like, you know, sometimes I drink and I watch the show. However,
I podcast. I get it.
I always look at it, and maybe this can help a listener. I always, and again, this is how I treat my social work. This is how I treat everything. I look at every new Survivor player like they are a family member. And so that really got like, and you can still cuss a family member out. You can still have fun with a family member, but it is all in, it's never malicious. It's never. And for me, that has always like kept me grounded. I sometimes like cuss out a Survivor player, but jokingly and like very like, you know, but I always treat them like they're a family member, because for me, it gives some level of like realization, like I don't want to go too far. I don't want to like, you know, but I'm still funny and I'm still crazy. So like, I just say this to the fans. It's like, you know, have grace, like we've all said, but like maybe think of them as like your extended family. And it's like, you know, if you had Thanksgiving with Nana and Bubby and Titi and Abuela, like, would you tweet that to your Abuela? Like, you know, would you say that to your Titi? Like, think about that. And I think that, like, you know, and again, come from a place of love. You could still be a little messy and come from a place of love, but it's like, right, like we're real people. Like the, like those, as much as we say they don't effing affect us, they really do. We can get 1,000 positive messages and all it takes is that one message to like ruin our day, and it's like, it's not fair to us.
I guess thank you both for coming on and exploring the type, I guess, of the intersectionality of being a BIPOC and a queer person on Survivor. I, when and Bryce and I talked
bitch,
about this,
and a bad bitch, okay.
When Bryce and I talked about this, he's like, but it could get serious. And I was like, let's do it. I'm so excited. So I really appreciate you guys, your openness. And I'm really hopeful that the more conversations, not just on Survivor, because, you know, Survivor's great, but, you know, it's good to be a person with less blind spots in life as well. Because, you know, that's the thing for me is I'm like, why do people want to keep their blind spots? Like, the more you can admit to your privilege and like blind spots, the more you can learn and be a better, more evolved person. So, whether you're a person listening to this that are like, that relates to these identities, or if you're a person who's like, I don't, but I want to be better. Hopefully this, and it was also just fun having you both.
Yes.
You're both delightful. Bryce, you know, I love you. And Vince, it was so nice to meet you. Thank you both. And if you like this podcast, tweet at me. Vince doesn't have a Twitter. Oh, where can people find you? There you go. Where can people find you?
209. Pull up to the 209.
So I only have Instagram, y'all. It is private now as well, but you could try to add me at Vincemus, VincaMous. MOUS. Sorry.
Wait, Vince, not try to add you. Oh, so you're not accepting everybody. So everybody not getting accepted. So you can try.
Only some. At least we put it private. Sorry, y'all.
Okay. But before we end, thank you so much, Hannah, for the opportunity to have this conversation. And I just want to say thank you, Vince. Like, when I was talking with Hannah, I was like, there is no way I could have this conversation without you. I love you so much.
Thank you, Vince. I feel like
a lot of the times I want to say what you say, but the way that you say it and the knowledge behind it is like so important. And so I'm so glad that you agreed to this. So I just wanted to say a special thank you to you. I appreciate you.
No, thank y'all. And thank the creator for giving me just a bit of Spartan.
If you have any questions, tweet at me or Instagram at me at Hannah Lil Nesson. If you have thoughts, please continue to listen to Just My Archetype. This has been a really, I feel full. Like I just ate a good meal. That's the feeling after this podcast. And I hope the listener has that too. So thank you and catch you next time.
Okay.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.